Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Tuesday, April 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, the last hour was a real lighthearted romp. If you have any mirth left in your soul, we'll try to keep the good times rolling. We welcome Gordon Fricke today. We'll talk automotive maintenance and repair. You got a car question? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email, voxpop@wamc.org, or call us, 800-348-2551. Yeah, you got a car issue? We got a guy. He's here, and we'll take your calls in a couple of minutes. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff on the program today. To answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive, an independent repair, auto body towing, and used car facility in lovely Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. It's always great to have him on the show. It's always a popular show. If you have a question, best bet is to call now while there are some open lines. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Mr. Gordon Fricke, nice to have you back in person. How are you?
Great. Good to be here. Nice ride in today.
What'd you drive?
No snow. An Audi Q5.
Was it the same one as last time?
It was the same one.
That's a nice ride.
It's the Bang & Olufsen. Olufsen?
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 Yeah. Stereo?
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
What were you playing on the ride?
Warren Zevon.
Ah, Excitable Boy?
Yes, I did. That's exactly what I played.
What a great album.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, let's, you know what? We can dispense with the questions and we'll just sing Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner.
Yeah, right.
For the whole show. Zach is okay.
He's going to cue it up.
Zach has not heard me sing, so I don't know why he's nodding, but there you go. Hey, what's new on the automotive front?
Well, interesting.
Hang on. Yeah. You sent me a text. Hilarious text. You said eclipses are making the prices go up.
Yeah, I was just joking.
That was hilarious.
Because, you know, every catastrophe there seems to be in the world, certain things rise in price.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder, is it true or is it an opportunity or is it just talk?
Yeah.
We had a tremendous amount of car repairs yesterday, I can say, for the
true?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No.
Well, anyway, we've said the E word, and now we're done. We won't have to talk about that again.
Post-eclipse.
Exactly. Yep. So anything else going on in the automotive world before we get to the questions?
Well, so that's interesting because I just saw somebody who had been having a lot of trouble with a car in town, in my area.
Yeah.
And she got so fed up with this car that I noticed she was driving a brand new 2024 Honda Accord.
Yeah.
So I said, looks like you solved the problem with your old Nissan. And she said, yeah, I just couldn't deal with it anymore. You know, check engine light, a broken rear control arm toted into the deal. You know, just one thing after the other. But I said, I hope that you didn't just pay sticker or sticker plus because there is a very, very, very good supply of cars now in the dealership network and in the warehouses or lots where they store them and ship them. So the days of paying too much because the car quote was barely available or
chip shortages and whatnot,
all that is really behind.
Okay, but you can't speak for every dealer,
right?
But are they still trying to game the system?
They have hung on hard and strong till very recently, but all of a sudden, if you notice any ads, rebates, interest rate, 0% options, deals, sales, every sale under the sun again. You know, every holiday is a new a tactic for a sale. So it's changing. Are the prices ever going to go back down? No, but they're not MSRP plus. In fact, they're under MSRP. So I would just advise new car shoppers to be very savvy, and there's a lot of cars out there now.
You know, one thing, and I purchased new cars, I purchased used cars, I've had a lot of cars over my life. One thing that's not pleasant for me, and some people dig it, is haggling with the dealership, and you know, because they have the upper hand, they know exactly what you're getting.
Yes,
you can do your best research, but you don't always know, and you got to trust.
Sometimes the if it's a fair, firm, unnegotiable price, sometimes that's better for everybody. You know where you stand. Everybody's in the same game. You know, your neighbor didn't say, "What, you paid that much for that car?" Well, I just bought the same thing and saved $2,000. Make you feel terrible, right? Keep it all the same.
Yeah, and never tell your neighbor what you paid.
No.
I mean, that'll always help you save face in the long run.
Exactly.
Gordon Fricke's our guest today. It's Automotive Maintenance and Repair. The number here is 800-348-2551. This email, and by the way, the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Nolan Savoy Mass writes, "I have a 2004 Avalon that has a front end, I think, vibration that has gradually increased to the point where I don't feel confident in driving it. Used to be most pronounced at highway speeds, 55 to 65. But now at lower speeds, and as you slow to a stop, the car is slightly bumping up and down. I don't see any weak spots on the tires. I replaced the rotors about 2 years ago. Any suggestions?"
Well, two things come to mind without being able to question them because it's an email.
Yeah.
If the car has a lot of miles on it, drive axle concerns become a problem. CV drive axles. The boots can rupture. They leak grease. The joint begins to fail. It gets a ton of play in it, and it will give you a wobble. And it could give them that kind of that roughness or that chunking at the very end.
Yeah.
The other thing we run into a lot is wheel bearing failures on everything, not just any one particular car or pickup. And they start out humming. Like it's a lot of people say, geez, it sounds like an old propeller plane in the background. And then it gets a little louder, and it changes when you go through turns. Instead of hearing it at 50, now it's starting at 30. And so wheel bearing and CV axle come to mind in this car's case.
Now, the wheel bearings, they used to be replaceable, but not anymore, right?
They are replaceable, but you're replacing a big unit now. Instead of individual bearings that you greased by hand and packed them and put them back together with a new seal, those days are 99.9% over. Now they're manufactured unitized bearing assemblies, so you kind of bolt them in.
Is the quality still, I mean, in the old days, if you had the right person who redid your bearings, you felt real good about it. Now you just buy it. It's like buying something at a big box store.
Yes, and bearing failures today are much more prevalent than they ever were because of this non-serviceable component.
Okay, so that's one check early on for the old days were better.
Yeah.
And we always do that on this show. This is from Andrew. "I have a 2022 Chrysler Pacifica, and I'm noticing that the infotainment system is very glitchy, so glitchy that the screen is frozen while driving and needs to reboot on many occasions. I've talked to the dealer about this. They say there's nothing they can do about it because I have the latest software installed. Is there anything we can do at the consumer level to report these bugs to manufacturers so they know what to fix in the next software update?"
Yeah, so the manufacturers do rely on the dealer network because they see the warranty claims and they see what they've had to replace in the past. But feedback is probably should go directly to the manufacturer if there is an area to direct it. So if they see 10,000 guys or people with Pacificas with that glitching screen, they might say, "Yeah, maybe we should look into this because we don't want too many people unhappy with our product, and we'll see."
Now, will that get back to the local dealer? Will they be upset that Andrew contacted, I don't know, the Chrysler company?
I don't think so, especially if it's just a for general information or query as to do they see issues that the dealer is not aware of or isn't talking about, you know?
You know, will they respond? I mean, I guess it's not fair to ask you because you are in the business, but most big companies, regardless of what venue and what variety we're talking about, some online retailer or some big box store that you have a problem with, you rarely hear back from the corporations.
If you had a fairly large concern, let's say you had a vehicle who's had a transmission failure that was 2 days after warranty, and you're really upset about it, and you alerted the customer service department, I think they would definitely get back to you.
Yeah,
I experienced that with a Honda Odyssey many, many years ago that we owned, and unfortunately, it did not get resolved to my liking, but they did respond back.
Oh, it's cold comfort indeed. All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll get to the phones in a moment. Gordon Fricke's our guest. It's Cars, and we'll be back. Great Thad Jones, Slipped Again. That's our bumper music here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Cars Today with Gordon Fricke. Something going bump in your vehicle? Give us a call. 800-348-2551. We begin in Warwick. Joe, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Gordon. Hi, Ray. I've just got a decision to make regarding a 2006 Mini Cooper.
Okay. Sure.
Through a few negotiations with a friend of mine, he decided to give it over to me. And basically, the car was in a flooded area a couple of years ago. And I decided to have it brought to a mechanic, and the mechanic told me the engine is seized. It didn't turn over or anything. So I have it sitting in my warehouse right now, and I'm considering replacing the engine in it. And basically what I've done to it is I've connected to a new battery to it, and it looks like all the electrical components work. And I know there's always an issue with a flooded car that, you might have electrical problems that'll just drive you crazy. So I'm trying to decide whether I should invest the money into replacing the engine and have myself a little third car.
Yeah. So where did it flood? I guess more importantly, is it salt or fresh water?
It was fresh water. It was rainwater.
Okay.
That's better, right?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. If you get a salt-flooded car, forget it.
Yeah, and it didn't flood into the car. What I understand is that the water reached up to the floorboards,
yep,
but not into the passenger compartment.
Yeah, what sounds to me like happened is the engine took a drink. It probably got high enough on the engine where the air intake got into the water, and the engine sucked some water in and hydrolocked and got into the cylinders and damaged some stuff there.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is the owner, which was the daughter of my friend, she brought it to a mechanic, and the mechanic says, well, just let it dry out. Well, she allowed it to dry out for 9 months.
Oh, boy.
Too long?
Yeah. So I expect that engine is probably pretty far gone, and it's not worth to remove it and rebuild it, because I've been looking around with prices of used Mini Cooper engines. And it seems that they're fairly reasonable. You can get a factory rebuilt engine for a fairly reasonable price. Is that what you're understanding as well?
Yeah, I mean, your other choice is a used engine with low mileage that hopefully has good history. You know the mileage is true, and buy it from a reputable salvage company that offers a warranty, and then you get the whole package. Yeah. If you get a reman engine from, let's say, BMW or Mini Cooper, you're just going to get the bare engine. Everything from your old engine gets swapped over to it. Starter, intake, manifold, fuel injection system. So sometimes a complete used assembly that has a history with low mileage sometimes is your better option.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think that might be the way to go.
All right, Joe, thanks.
Well,
go ahead.
If I dump this on your lap, what would your ballpark?
No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that on the radio, Joe. I'm sorry about that. We can't do that kind of business, buddy. Thanks for the call. You know what you could do, though? they're pretty small, right? You cut some holes in the bottom of the driver's side, and then you make it like a Fred Flintstone car. You know what I mean?
In case the engine fails, you can keep going.
Yeah, yeah. You don't even need the engine at that point. You just take the engine out, it'd be wonderful.
Right.
It may not pass inspection, I'm not sure. William in Highland Falls, you're on.
Hi, so I have a 2004 Toyota Highlander, 253,000 on it. My second one, my last one made it to 275. And for over three, 4 years now, my check engine light is coming on intermittently. It'll stay on for a month or two, sometimes three, four, 5 months. Problem is that when the last state I lived in didn't have emission standards.
Right.
So it would still pass. And it's our second car, so it's not a big deal. But in New York, I have to pass emissions. So for the past 2 years, every time the check engine light goes off, I rush down to the mechanic, get it passed, and then go on and, you know, wait another year. Every mechanic that's looked at this car has said it pulls a catalytic converter code. I've had people tell me that replacing the O2 sensor, I had that done, stayed off for a couple months. Somebody put some type of small device somewhere in the exhaust system. That helped it for 6 months. One guy tried to charge me $8,000 to replace the entire back half of the exhaust system. I didn't do that.
Right.
I've heard that replacing the gas cap could get it to stop. It seems like every mechanic has a different idea, and none of them are the same.
Yeah. If the only
one other thing, every mechanic has said, yeah, the car runs great. It's in great shape. You know, other than not passing inspection, you might have it for another couple years at least.
If the only code that keeps reoccurring is the catalytic converter efficiency, and on your car it would be PO420 and PO430, left and right banks of the engine. What happens is the catalytic converters will, the precious metals that are exposed to the exhaust stream, eventually do tend to deplete, and they also get coated with deposits that keep the exhaust from going over them and reacting. So there are some cleaners which you may have tried pouring in the gas tank. They have catchy names like Cataclean or Clean Your Cat or something like that, and they can and do work if the converters are still usable and okay. Yeah, the short answer is that's a super common event when cars get high mileage. And in some cases, the only solution is to replace the catalytic converters. Ooh. But in some vehicles, that is so horribly expensive that you wouldn't do it. I mean, horribly expensive.
Right.
$3,000, $4,000, $5,000.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
that causes the vehicle to be scrapped, basically, at that point. So exhaust leaks anywhere around those converters are notorious for setting a PO420 or PO430. Gaskets, rust holes, even holes in the exhaust system halfway back on some vehicles have an effect on those catalytic converter codes. So if you've got any exhaust system problems, basically from the engine to at least half or three quarters of the way back, that can be a problem.
Hmm.
Other than that, put the additives in it.
Give it a shot at least.
And if you can catch it where the light is truly off and get it inspected, you're okay.
All right. Hey, good luck with that one. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Have they ever tried to make something that will reduce emissions, like a catalytic converter, that doesn't require platinum and all these other rare metals?
Well, you see, it becomes a chemical reaction. So when the exhaust stream goes through it, the chemistry gets changed by the catalyst, and what comes out the tailpipe is way, way less polluting. I don't know if there's any other way to scrub it or clean it.
Okay.
Practically, you know.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Barry in Hartford, Connecticut. Barry, you're up.
Hi there. I live in, let's start with this. I live on the side of a mountain that has a steep road, and they salt that thing in the wintertime. And I've lost about four vehicles already to salt. And right now I'm driving an older Corolla Toyota with a rust spot on the frame, and the side panels. Is there anything I could do to slow that rust down?
You know, when it's later in the game like this, when you're already seeing it, it's a little tough. There are products that can be applied to the underbody of those cars and the inner panels with equipment that is paraffin-based, which is wax, and there's also lanolin-based, which is sheep's wool, lanolin from sheep's wool. And those can be applied, and they will do a magnificent job holding the rust back. When you're really, really rusty, it's sometimes really too late. But as far as rust repair, most body shops won't do it unless you're restoring a vintage car that's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
So you're in a rotten spot there with that. But my only recommendations are very frequent washings, which is hard, you know, if you don't have the facilities, and get that underbody cleaned and the fender wells and, you know, and all that stuff. And then the car gets so old that you just can't clean it up enough and the rust starts to take over.
Okay.
Who applies that? Is there a place that you could go, or should I do that by myself?
You would just search out rust proofing, undercoating, rust preventative, and you
they're
want
out there.
Yeah, they're out there, and you want products that are okay to put on older cars with. Like I said, the paraffin or the lanolin based stuff that's kind of soft and flows.
You all right?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good luck, Barry. Appreciate the call. Gordon Fricke's our guest today, 800-348-2551. Mike writes in, I have a 2017 VW all-track wagon. I was told the oil drain plug is plastic and easily damaged. Any recommendation about oil changes? Do you think a typical oil change shop can do a change without damaging the plug, or am I relegated to dealer oil changes?
Well, not necessarily, but yes, a lot of vehicles have plastic oil pans, and now a lot of them have these quick-release drain plugs, is exactly what he's talking about. And a little special tool goes in there. It resembles a flat-bladed screwdriver, but it really isn't. And it keys in there and takes that plastic drain plug out with about, oh, maybe like a third of a turn. And the rule on those is, after a while, you just replace the drain plug with a new plastic one that has a new O-ring to seal it, and that's the end of it. So my only thought would be, if you take it somewhere, ask ahead of time, do you have the special little wrench to take my plastic drain plug out? And if they say, what?
Yeah.
Maybe don't go there.
I mean, I would hope that a chain that just does that might be set up to do it.
I would think they would say, hey, look, boys, here's some new special tools, because Volkswagens and Ford pickups and stuff have plastic drain plugs now.
All right. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke's here today. Suzanne is in Greenport. Hello, Suzanne.
Hello.
You're on.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You bet.
We've got a 2016 XC70 Volvo and have an in-car GPS system. And we've got a crazy, like, mismatch between what we see on the map and the verbal guidance. And I'm talking, like, hundreds of miles. So you're looking at the map and, oh, my goodness, wait, we're heading towards Ottawa. And, you know, so I'm trying to determine. Now, we have not had this updated. We did not buy the car new, but we've never had it updated. So we're curious if this kind of an issue could be addressed if we did an update with the system. And then if that's something you can only do at a dealer?
Yeah, it probably is. It's definitely a software-driven system, and your car is new enough to where it's getting that information through the satellite link, where early
right.
nav
mm-hmm.
systems were from disks that you plugged in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Volvo dealer, I believe, is going to be your only option, and just call the dealer with the information you just gave us as to what it's doing, just so they know that you're there for the latest nav software, but you got a problem or a glitch with it telling you you're not really where you think you are.
How far off is it, Suzanne, when you look at the GPS?
I mean, quite literally, at times it's like hundreds of miles.
Oh, okay. Because in my car, the compass, there was a reset for my compass when I got my most recent car, and I had to drive in circles in a parking lot for a couple times before the compass set, and then everything seemed to work out all right.
Yeah, isn't that a cool procedure?
Yeah, that was funny.
The first time we did that, it was like, wow, you got to, you know, do circles one way, circles another way, and
it's pretty
but
fun.
You could look in your owner's manual and just see if they're talking about something that what Ray is referring to. Maybe there is a way to boot and reinitialize that nav system yourself. So definitely, if there is an owner's manual, a lot of them are online nowadays, but you may want to just see if that's something that could be reset yourself.
Yeah.
That would be super because, you know, we live in an area where there is no Volvo dealer nearby. I mean, it's like we'd have to go to Connecticut.
Oh, yeah. That's a drive.
You know, Greenport's at the very end of Long Island, so teeny village.
And, you know, with no GPS, you don't know. You could end up in Oklahoma, right? So
you might end up
exactly.
might end up at a an old Saab dealer. Right?
Hey, good luck.
I had one of those for a while. Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Where do you stand on, as a driver, as a person like me who enjoys driving?
Yeah.
Where do you stand on the GPS? Do you try to not to use it? I know I do.
No, I definitely like to use it, particularly if I'm going somewhere where I've never been before.
Well,
But, I mean, I'm not the type of person that says, you know, by golly, I'm going to follow maps and signs and written directions. No, I think it's phenomenal.
Well, that's what I do.
Yeah.
No,
you still get your maps out, like in the Le Mans?
I don't have all the maps anymore, but I like to wing it now.
I just cleaned out an old car the other day. It was a 65 Mercedes-Benz. It was a car that was in the family, and it was full of maps from the 70s, 60s, late 60s, early 70s, right?
How much you want for the car?
It went to a family member, but I'll sell you the maps.
I don't want the maps. Let's go to West Stockbridge. Gordon Fricke's on. David's in West Stockbridge. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I'm in a 2020 Kia Telluride, and it drives great. It's got about 100,000 miles on it now. When I come either off of a light, if there's any sort of incline, or especially if I go up a hill, from a low gear, like from start, there's a stutter, like a shutter in the acceleration, that will go away if I either gun it or, you know, or back off and try again. But it's pretty consistent, and I brought it in. They can't replicate it.
That's
any
annoying.
What I would want to check is what the transmission fluid maintenance intervals are on that vehicle. Because transmission fluid, in some cars it's considered lifetime, and others there's quite a bit of maintenance changes. And funny enough, this morning I drove a Honda with about not quite 100,000 miles on it, probably like, I don't know, 80 or 90.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a shuddering feeling that I'm very convinced that it's probably worn out transmission fluid, and we don't see any history of the fluid being changed. And I've had this remedy a tremendous amount of cars for a shudder or a jerkiness.
All the time, or just when you're reverse or slow, or is it the shutter?
It can happen at different times. A lot of times it's very light throttle, light load cruising, which is, this caller is not having this at all. He's the opposite. This is from a takeoff, from a dead stop takeaway.
Yeah.
But because the fluid is so important to the transmissions, I would be first off checking to see what your maintenance interval is on that automatic transmission fluid. And if it's due, get it done. It's a maintenance item anyway, and it may solve the problem.
Right. It's been in and it's been worked on. It was pretty bad to the point where my wife couldn't drive it. You know, she was freaked out about the car. And when I brought it in, they did an update, you know, of the computer system or
right.
whatever.
Yep.
It got better, but it's still there a little bit.
Interesting.
So would that still indicate that it's the fluid issue, or could it possibly be something else?
So they did a software update to the transmission module? Or
that's
just
what they said. Okay. I mean, I just bring it in. They do their thing.
Yeah. Definitely everything's software driven today, including that transmission. But I would just be see if they change the fluid that day. Just see what the service history is on the fluid, because it's very relatively cheap and easy.
All right, David, thanks a lot. Are there times when you should not change your transmission?
Well,
fluid?
It's funny you say that, because there are some vehicles that claim to have lifetime fluid. And what comes to mind is our Subarus, right? I've had a lot of people say, gee, should I get this CVT fluid change? It's a constant variable transmission fluid. Subaru says no. We call the local dealer, and they always say, no, we don't change it. We tend not to. But most other cars, or a lot of other cars, do have change intervals.
Interesting. All right, let's take a break here. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Plaza Travel Center, presenting Travel to Japan this fall on a trip escorted by Plaza Travel owner Gene Gagnon. 518-785-3338 for details. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting their Earth Day event with volunteer projects for children, adults, and community groups, Saturday, April 20th from 9 to noon, albanypinebush.org. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, producing customized product displays and museum environments for over 60 years. Empire provides in-house design, production, and project management, crafting exhibits from start to finish. EmpireExhibits.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's Gordon Fricke Day. That's Automotive Maintenance and Repair. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. All right. This is from a concerned dad in Orange County. Mm. You ready?
Yep.
My daughter has kept her snow tires on since the winter. Does driving with these snow tires in good no-snow weather harm them?
Well, when it gets too warm, yes. So right about now is probably safe to get them off the vehicle. But as we learned from last week, it wouldn't have been good to not have them if you were commuting. And I don't know what you got for snow down here, but we got some snow last week and the mountains got a lot. But yes, the warmer it is, so the composition of snow tire treads is that it's much softer and it stays softer in colder temperatures. The converse effect is the hotter it gets, the gooier it gets, and the faster it's going to wear out. So not harmful, but as it gets warmed up like it is today, time to get them off.
All right, this is from, I guess, DM. Pentastar 3.6 lifter tick, just beginning 121,000 miles. Please advise on diagnostics to confirm, or could it be fuel injector issue? Many thanks. Now, before you do that, the Pentastar, that's some satanic car that I don't know about. What is that?
It's actually a Chrysler product. Ah. It's their 3.6 liter V6, and it's a really super robust engine. It's in every.
Oh, it's an engine. It's not a
engine.
Vehicle.
Yeah,
okay,
it's
I
the
understand.
Engine.
It's a Pentastar.
It's the Chrysler, or it's Stellantis, or whatever you want to call it, or Dodge. But it's their 3.6 liter V6.
Okay,
it's a great go-to engine.
Okay,
it's in everything.
All right.
I don't hear or see a lot of lifter issues with those engines, not to say there isn't one there. They're a little noisy due to the injection system. Oil change history, always a big question, right?
Yeah.
I can't comment any further because I don't see giant lifter problems, but that doesn't mean there isn't one with his engine.
Okay.
You know?
This is from Jerome, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Twice now, says Jerome, I've experienced the same problem with my 2016 Camry, wherein I get six, for lack of a better term, idiot lights. Well, thank you for that, Jerome. And my speedometer goes out. Hmm. Both times I made an appointment to get it looked at, and it went away just as mysteriously. That happens so many times.
Oh, way too often.
Yeah.
And believe me, we hate it probably more than you do. Because we have to bring it in, diagnose it, scan it, find nothing, spend a lot of time, and can't always charge that much time for fear of saying, oh, this guy charges way too much. He didn't do anything. All the lights were off when it got there. That's probably a wheel speed sensor issue because it affected the speedometer and a bunch of lights, which I'm sure probably ABS, traction control, maybe low tire. Probably a ton of lights related to one failure went on.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it was a wheel speed sensor problem or a vehicle speed sensor issue.
You know, years ago, I bought a 2000 DeVille from a fly-by-night outfit in Schenectady County.
Yep.
Cheap. I mean, it was like dirt cheap. And so I said, well, what could be possibly wrong with this?
Right.
I believe that also was flooded in salt water because it took me so long to work. I don't think you had anything to do with that one, but it took me a long time to figure out the electronics, replacing modules and relays and everything else. But all the lights were on at different times. I mean, the wiring was just screwed up.
Yeah. Well, we see that. And sometimes one sensor failure or one component will trigger a bunch of other ones, kind of like sympathetic pain, right? You know, tooth number 30s. Got trouble, and then the four teeth after that are screaming, and you think you got a whole mouthful of bad teeth, right? And it's really the cause of one.
Interesting. All right, let's go back to our phone lines. Gordon Fricke's our guest, 800-348-2551. Walt in Stamford, Vermont. Walt, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2012 Ford F-150 EcoBoost twin turbo. I bought this thing last summer in Connecticut. And I drove it home. By the time I got home, I got 20 miles to the gallon. And the rest of the summer, I was pulling a trailer, getting 18.5 while I was pulling it. Then winter hit. And I noticed that constantly the mileage per gallon going down. Now it's sitting at 15.7, and it's not coming back up. It runs good. There's no codes. And what do you think I should look for?
Well, so the fuel companies winterize the gasoline in the fall. And it's much less efficient gas. And they need it to stand up to cold temperatures so vehicles still start. However, everybody gets poorer economy in cold states because of the winterized gasoline.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes they dose it up heavier than others. You generally notice when the winter fuel goes away that all of a sudden you're getting better economy. I have a feeling that's part of what's happening to your truck. Other parts are more simple and varied. Tire pressure, alignment, air filter condition, spark plug conditioning, all this stuff that used to be kind of called a tune-up, which it's really not anymore, but all the stuff that makes the engine run and makes the vehicle go down the road easier has an effect on the fuel economy. You can't sharpen them up and make them any leaner because the computer's doing that constantly. It's watching the fuel mixtures and tailoring that fuel system impeccably, better than you ever could years ago without electronic injection. Be interesting to see what happens, you know, and you could inquire if you buy gas at one spot or a couple spots and they're name brand stations, you know, tier one suppliers, top tier gas. You could.
Usually, Sunoco.
Yeah. You could reach out to Sunoco and say, hey, roundabout time, when do you guys stop the winter fuel?
No, that's it. Is that a trade secret or will they say it?
I don't think so. No.
All right, Walt, good luck, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. We'll go to Irene in Cambridge. Hello, Irene.
Hi. Hey, I have a question for Gordon.
Okay.
I have a 2012 Prius C that I bought for my son when it was 2 years old. It's the absolute best car I have ever had. It gets wonderful mileage. I now have 176,000 miles on it, and I'm starting to be concerned. I do a lot of driving. I've noticed the power's a little bit less, and this brake light keeps coming on. I took it. I'm faithful about having it serviced, and they said it was something to do with the computer. They shut it off, but now it's back, and I'm just wondering, should I buy a different Prius?
What year is it?
Time?
It's 12.
Yeah. 2012.
All right, so 12-year-old car, roughly, right?
Yeah.
That's my specialty.
That's where I usually start.
Just a great car.
So you got some good mileage on there, 170. So, you know, it's
176.
That's pretty good. So at some point, your batteries are going to deteriorate.
One battery I've replaced, not the expensive one.
No,
$4,000 one. Ooh, I did not replace. Expensive.
No, I mean the hybrid batteries.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they,
at some point they'll go.
Yeah.
They're good for 10 years, but you're past that now.
Yeah.
I'm not, and you'll get indications on your instrument clusters saying your batteries are weakening.
Okay.
You get plenty of warning. But so I guess here's the thing. The car's been great. You may be ready for another one. It sounds like you could be because you're asking us or me. In the future, if you say, I'm keeping this car forever, you'll need hybrid batteries. That's $3,000 to $4,000. And you may need other things coming up, wheel bearings, brakes, all the usual stuff that cars still need. I can't say it's time to get rid of the car, but maybe get it in.
Well, let me just ask you one other thing then. I would get another Prius. Do you think the newer Priuses are good?
I think as good as mine? Yeah, I think so. Toyota strives for quality, and they have their downfalls like any company does with certain products that things just don't go great.
Right.
Toyota's the type of company that prides themselves on quality. That's what they're totally known for. So I would not be a bit concerned about buying another one.
All right, Irene, thanks a lot for the call. Rolf in Kerhonkson's been waiting a very long time. Go ahead, Rolf.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I also have a Toyota Prius. This is a 2013. It's got about 155,000 miles on it. And I've noticed something over the past almost year, but it's a little less than that because I've got it from someone fairly recently, and I'd been in it with her. When the car has been on the highway doing, and the engine's hot, so we've been doing maybe 65 miles an hour or so for an hour or 45 minutes. When you slow down a little bit and then apply the gas, there's a knocking or a popping, almost a thud, almost like a muffled backfire or something from the front of the car underneath the hood. And I figured that if it's happening when the car is running hot, I should try experimenting with putting the heat on to try to draw some of the heat off of the engine and roll the windows down. It seemed to help a little bit. And then I also noticed that if I put it on cruise control, it wouldn't happen when there was a slow acceleration through cruise control. But if you do it with a gas pedal, you'd hear this thud, this pop, occasionally. Once the car cools down, it doesn't happen. And if I pull off the thruway onto an exit ramp and I stop at a stoplight and then give it the gas or give it some gas once it turns green, I'll hear the thud, but about a couple minutes after that, it's gone. Mm. So it's only when it's hot.
Is it the same sound you hear when the engine is commanded on by the hybrid system?
Interesting. I see where you're going with that.
You mean when it's on cruise control?
Right. Well, let's say it's a hybrid. So you accelerate very, very mildly with no engine. It's just on electric. And then the computer calls the engine in. And is it the same sensation you get when the computer turns the engine on?
It seems to me that it seems like it happens either way. There's a thud if I'm, you know.
I guess what I'm thinking of, maybe it is the engine being called on that you're hearing or feeling that maybe is not as subtle as it used to be because the car is getting a bit older and a bit more high mileage. But I don't see enough Priuses to have experienced that or know that there's a condition that causes that thud. But pay attention to it.
Interesting.
See if it feels as though it's when the engine gets commanded back on, and you might just feel the bang of that engine starting. Could be some weakening engine mounts, just things getting a little bit loose, you know.
I think that's worth investigating.
Very possibly.
Yeah. I did take it into a place, and they couldn't really find anything. They thought that the heat shield was pretty tattered, and they took that off, but it still happened.
Yeah.
All right.
Experiment with it a little bit. See if that. If you can figure out what is actually occurring when you feel or hear that thud.
Rolf, thanks for the call. You know, it kind of reminds me of this new thing that's been going on probably 10 years now, where you stop at a stoplight and you hit the gas, the light turns green, and, oh, my engine was off.
The auto shut off
Boy,
start.
That drives me nuts.
Do you have a vehicle with that feature?
Yeah, the Chevy.
Yeah. It drives a lot of people crazy. I'll tell you, we've spoken about this before, but my uncle in Germany, who had a career with Volkswagen, Audi, gasoline has always been double or triple of what it is here. Mm-hmm. So they've been conserving gas way longer than, I don't even know if we're conserving gas, but, you know, it was on their minds to conserve gasoline. So we'd come up to a railroad crossing or even a traffic light that just turned red, he'd reach down and shut the engine off.
Wow.
Every single time. And it was to save gasoline.
And so is that why these American cars do that?
Well, so that got adopted into ways to save gasoline. And if you think of the 20 million or however many millions of cars there are out there, if every one of them does this, that's a lot of gasoline savings.
Is it, though? If you're in a traffic jam or if you're stopped for a long period of time, I understand. But if you're stopped for 10 seconds and then you have to put the gas on and in, which presumably you need maybe a little more to do that.
Not much.
No, really?
Not really, because, you know, these engines are so finely tuned with the injection systems that when you're sitting at a stop, that engine, the fuel gets completely shut off and everything is ready to roll. The transmission is still running, has a motor in it that keeps the fluid pressure up. And the minute you start, all it is just turn those injectors on and you're going again.
All right, listen, we have about a minute and a half here with Gordon Fricke. Let's get another call in. Marilyn in Stormville. Marilyn, go ahead.
Hi. My daughter has a Mazda sedan. I think it's an X3, and it's a 2020, I think. When it gets very cold, all the instruments in the panel, the crazy lights, start flashing for no good reason. And she tried replacing some kind of a card in the dashboard, but that didn't fix it. When it got warmer, it stopped happening.
Huh. 30 seconds.
Yeah, so other than moving south, I would say...
wait a minute.
It could be a problem with that instrument cluster itself, not the card, but some circuitry in that cluster, which is a complete replacement that requires reprogramming once it's changed. So it wants to be pretty well identified that is the cause and the solution will be to replace it. And or seriously, if now that the weather's warmer, it never reoccurs again, wait till it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, bite the bullet later. You know, who knows? You may not have a car.
Yeah, sell the car in warm weather, Marilyn.
Right.
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot. We're almost out of time here. Very quickly here as we roll the Count Basie. Jeff has in New Paltz, has a Crosstrek blown head gasket. Still starts, sitting in the driveway. Is it worth anything? Should I donate it to charity or would someone actually pay me and tow it for parts?
You could always advertise it out on one of these marketplace websites or Craigslist because somebody might have a great engine and a bad car, and they want to marry the two together.
Yeah.
Why not try to advertise it out?
Hey, man, thank you for being here.
Oh, you're welcome.
Crank up the Z-Von and head on home.
Yes.
Support comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the forests, wetlands, shorelines, and ridges that protect Lake George permanently. Projects, events, at news@lglc.org. At Capital Region Classical at Union College, presenting British pianist Paul Lewis in a program of Schubert sonatas, Sunday, April 21st, 3 p.m., capitalregionclassical.org. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening. Gordon will be back next month. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, and Ed Rosen screened the calls today. Thank you, Ed. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Pets und Vets with Chris Dallas and Susan Ciculli. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3 Remsen Utica, WAMK HD 90.9 Kingston, WOSR HD 91.7 Middletown, WCEL HD 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN HD 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC HD 103.9 Ticonderoga, WAMQ HD 105.1 Great Barrington, WWES HD 88.9 Mount Kisco, WANC HD 90.1 Stamford, WANR 88.5 Brewster, WQQQ 103.3 Sharon, and WAMC AM 1400 Albany.